Brasschuk TV, I'm not going to play this particular video selection, but this is in response to the latest attempts at health scare. Yes, and actually, yes, now that I say that, I need to try to get that John Stewart thing back. But yes, this was posted by Bloomberg, a major business news network, over the weekend. And this is dated the 27th. Okay. The World Health Organization is set to declare the deadly swine flu virus outbreak in Mexico and the U.S. a global concern, potentially prompting travel advisories. An emergency committee of the WHO in Geneva will declare the outbreak a public health event of international concern. In a teleconference that began at 4 p.m. today, said the person who spoke on conditions of anonymity because the meeting is confidential. If you're over 40, you've seen the, quote, swine flu routine before. It came out of the blue. The government created hysteria over it and tried to herd everyone into mandatory vaccinations. The vaccinations killed and disabled numerous people before they were discontinued. Here's some material about another government-slash-media-created hysteria hoax, avian bird flu. The mechanics are the same. This video starts slowly, but it is worth watching and studying. And yes, I did kind of listen. It's a very interesting and technical thing. He starts slow and gives in all these wonderful scientific details. But I'm going to go do a more interesting video. I'll work on a little program here. Resources to combat swine flu hysteria. Brasschuktv.com. Shoddy science and media hysteria. Using public health scares to terrorize the public and push government slash big pharma agendas. Get the facts about swine flu and share with your friends. Page 610, brasschuktv.com. Sources to combat swine flu hysteria. Number one, mathematics. The greater Mexico City metropolitan area has a population of 22 million people, according to Wikipedia, which I don't like as a source and is rather, you know... But it's probably right, 22 million people, okay. Many millions of them live in crushing poverty, poor health, and with poor sanitary conditions. 1,000, quote, cases, which is higher than the so far reported number, equals to a 0.005% of the population. Now, my powers of math, that would be 0.005 of a percent of the population. 60 deaths equals... Well, tens, hundreds, thousands, three, ten thousandths of a percent of the population. Number two, deaths. Of the few deaths, no one has mentioned who these casualties are. Are they elderly or infirm people who could just as easily have been killed by the common cold or a slip and fall? It makes a difference. The long-term history of government pharmaceutical industry scams... These guys, hold on one second. I was going to try to get Andrew Johnson to call. Let me see. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay.
Okay, let me adjust this. Let me turn. Okay, I think that'll work. Oh, so say something now. Let me test this.
Testing.
Yeah, now what was that? I think you said you're about 130 miles north, slightly east of London. Is that right?
North of London, yeah.
North, okay.
130 miles north, yeah.
Yes. Okay, well, what I was doing, BradshawTV.com, I read the one description of this one video about this latest flu hysteria. I thought I would finish this one thing, and I think the video is rather interesting. Okay, we're at number two. First, the math. Okay, the math, basically, Andrew, with 1,000 cases in Mexico City, this and with 60 deaths, that equals 0.003% of the population. You know, and then, of course, I've done some things like, you know, in 07, basically 750,000 Americans were killed by the healthcare profession. So, you know, whatever. Okay. Of the few deaths, no one has mentioned, okay, I read that one, the long-term history of government slash pharmaceutical industry scams. These guys have tried to institute national flu vaccine programs before. The last time was 1976 under Gerald Ford. The public recognized the foolishness and danger involved in accepting the government vaccines and rejected it. The much-threatened, quote, pandemic never happened. It has a link to the article, Salon.com. If you've missed yesterday's video on how the U.S. government has been positioning itself to force its population to accept a flu vaccination, I strongly recommend that you watch this. It's page 609 at Brassic TV, and I guess it's probably part 6. 9 minutes. Well, so instead of maybe going to that, Andrew, so what I know, I'm going to go to your side. You had posted quite an interesting article. And actually, it started with I was trying to get Dr. Sherry Tenpenny back. I spoke with her 2 years ago in January, and we just went through the nuts and bolts of the idea of vaccinations, which the last time we spoke a couple weeks ago, you know, I brought up my opinions of this insanity. And basically, it's like, what else can it be but eugenics? I mean, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a mixture of things, one of which is just the basic fear.
So is it basically just incredibly stupid mistakes, people after blind profit, and they don't really care what they do to their victims in the name of health?
I think there's that. Obviously, the fear and, the profit motive and wishing to make a lot of money out of the, you know, this sort of situation. But I think the fear is a key factor as well to somebody.
Yes, and yes, I want to go to your posting. I think you sent out an email like within. Let's see, where is it? It's got to be here somewhere. Oh, actually, I'm in the email that plays these brass checks, these different ones. But yes, what was your? Actually, the one thing you brought up, which I don't think I've ever heard this. What I heard was that in 1918, this flu that came out. This is the story. Supposedly, aspirin came out basically around the same time. It was very popular. These people took aspirin. And, of course, what does that do? That lowers the fever, which is nature's natural response to an invading pathogen. Your body heats up, and it kills it. Okay, so now you have artificially lowered the temperature of the body. The pathogen is allowed to mutate and just grow exponentially, and then then you really are done. You know, so, and that was a possibility. Now, you were actually saying that it was a vaccination. Now, I was not aware. So you were saying that the majority of the people that died in the flu epidemic of 1918 were vaccinated and died from the vaccination?
Well, that's what I'd read. This was an article that was posted on whale.to,
okay.
Where it stated that a lot of the problems were introduced by the vaccination itself.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't heard the aspirin,
I'm not sure where I heard that first. Attention. I guess I could try to search for it. But I know I just sounded incredible when I heard it. You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, if a fever does get, you know, like really intense, something you do. But this, and I think aspirin originally was willow bark. It was meant as a poultice. It was not meant,
yes.
You know, to be ingested. You know,
yes.
It's just amazing. And this whole idea of vaccination is just unbelievable. I mean, Dr. Tenpenny told me that it was, and we talked about this, my co-producer. That this was it came from cows. There was a substance,
yes.
Whatever there. I think it was they drained these, I guess maybe the lymph glands or something of cows and mixed it. I guess through some type of laceration of the human victim or guinea pig or something.
That's right. It was. I believe the way it was done was Edward Jenner came across this in that the cowpox disease was similar to smallpox, and so if you infected somebody deliberately with cowpox.
Uh-huh.
They would then be immune to smallpox.
That was
the way it started. Was what I was taught in my biology lessons at high school.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of vaccination, I think, evolved from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one second. Excuse me, Andrew. This is WSAC Shepherd Sound. We're talking with Andrew Johnson. His website is checktheevidence.com. And I'm getting up his latest. Researchers question nature, cause, and treatment. That might have been what I was thinking of in terms of a swine flu outbreak. Derbyshire, what's going on there?
That's the county where I live.
Because you say Derbyshire, would you?
Derbyshire. Well, you say Derbyshire actually.
Derbyshire.
Very strange. Yeah, Derbyshire. With
okay.
You pronounce the as if it was an A.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes. Actually, at one point, I knew somebody who's Australian, and for a while, and actually, for a little brief period, of course, I've lost it, but I could speak Australian, you know, and because of different words, you know, different, whatever, you can go on about that, but,
Yeah.
Of course, I haven't paid attention lately, but at first when they said this, BBC was saying that, you know, the streets were quiet. It was like Christmas. You know, it was like, you could hear the birds and everything. Okay. Now, they also, at one point, played these interviews, these people saying, well, you know, so they actually went out because there were less people. So I don't know how solidly the story took. You know, it's interesting, people in Mexico, probably, do you think basically there would be the same result in this country or yours if they did that, or would be a little less? You think hopefully these Americans are, I don't know though, is this Anglo-American propaganda machine that's doing this? I mean,
well, I haven't heard the BBC story that you'd mentioned. I've mainly stopped watching the BBC now because...
Oh yeah, I cannot watch TV. I don't watch TV. I haven't listened to BBC in a while, so I just, you know.
No, I haven't heard this idea of the ghost town. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them to put a story like that out, you know. I mean, it sounds like the sort of thing they would try and, you know, I mean, I for instance, caught a story on the BBC. This was, I think, when will it would have been? I think it was just before Christmas. And strangely enough, they ended up in my hometown, which is about 100 miles north of here.
Uh-huh.
And they were interviewing market traders, and they were saying, "Oh, you must be really struggling, you know, because of the credit crunch and the banking crisis. You must be really struggling for business, you know." And this market trader was saying, "Well, not really, you know. It's about the same as normal, actually, you know." So the BBC were trying to put words into this guy's mouth and paint a black picture, and this guy was basically saying, "You know, well." It's actually not that bad, you know, and they keep doing this, you know.
I think basically on the same theme of what you're doing, I saw this just shameful thing. It was CNN, and this was like when the tax, you know, the people that were trying to point out, you know, the Constitution of this country and that it's not a joke, and that there is no law that requires American citizens to pay a direct and apportioned tax on their labor, et cetera, et cetera. You know, all these things, Ron Paul's agenda, oh my God, you know, I could go on, you know, forever about that. And CNN was trying to paint these people as, you know, some types of, you know, fanatics or, you know, and she was shouting over them and basically, yes, actually shouting over them. And it was just ridiculous. You know, so I mean, you're supposed to be media, but you're not going to let someone talk who you're. And see, that's what I'm doing. I'm not letting you talk. So, So, what's the latest read? In, I mean, you don't listen to the media in England, but you know, like your neighbors or your friends or your coworkers or whatever. I mean, swine flu thing.
I usually catch. So I don't listen to the media that much. What I usually catch is we have sort of national BBC radio here. And they have an hourly bulletin, which is about 5 minutes long, and I normally catch that once or twice a day. So I do sort of pick up the headlines and what, you know, rot they're trotting out. So I noticed the last, when I listened briefly at about 6 o'clock tonight, 6 p.m., it was, they didn't lead with the swine flu story. They led with another custom war troop in Afghanistan or something.
I mean, people in all countries, they die from, every year, they die from pneumonia, and they die from the flu, and they die from, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, you know, what is this? It's just so ridiculous. And actually, I overheard someone the other day, a rather young person, and they were just like disparaging the whole story. They're like, you know, I just think there's just so many bad things going on in the world. They're just trying to, you know, get your attention away from, you know, whatever, not looking behind the curtain or something.
I think actually, you know, one of the things which I've become interested in is over the last sort of 10 years is the near death experience.
Oh yes,
because you know. It's that if you study that phenomenon, near-death experience, it gives you a new perspective on dying and death, actually.
Yes.
And some of the things that people describe.
Yes, for a while I did that. Actually, some time ago there was a work, it was called Mind Trek. It was about the Army's program of remote viewing. And this person, I guess it was Joseph McMonigal, and he was their star.
Oh, yes.
He was one of their star you know, people.
He was.
People in the, you know, whatever. And it's interesting, now I've tried to present different works like Secret Life of Nature, come on, Peter Tompkins, and of course the autobiography of Yogi is very interesting, especially I think I would recommend it to Christians who buy this attitude, you know. In my way, I would go through Millville, there's a, well, oh, I guess maybe. think we should use a disclaimer. I don't think I did a disclaimer. We didn't get too deep into the intrigue, but you know, the standard disclaimer is that any views, opinions, or commentary expressed are solely those of the individuals who are providing them, and there is no intention either expressed or implied to suggest that WSHC 89.7 Shepherd University of the State of West Virginia is responsible for what is happening here. So the reason that made me think of that, if anyone's going to be upset, it might be the Christian. I'm not trying to denigrate anyone, but on their little, they have a little thing out front for their church, and it has a little, it has a thing. It says something basically that Jesus is the only way to God, you know. And this type of thing is just, it's really amazing. You know, we're all each individual sons of God, parts and parcels of God. You know, David Icke actually approached that in a very nice way that would be easy for everyone, you know, to handle and not necessarily, you know, you did step away from religion, you know, whatever. But yes, this flu thing. And I guess actually when my first, when I listened to what we did a couple weeks ago, a few things stuck out right away in my, I'd listened to it a couple times, but of course, you know, the, granted the subject is huge, the psyops of 9/11, you know, go on, so, you know, 2 hours, so, you know, what do you say about something, a subject, I guess it's basically at this point, whatever, but, oh, okay, well, that, I wrote them down, I don't have them, but the one story that was very interesting, on the 16th of October, 2001, two Mossad agents were caught red-handed. Are you aware of the story in the Mexican Congress?
Right, not in Mexican Congress, no.
It would actually be worth it for me to find that story and read it. It's very compelling. Yes, two Israeli Mossad agents were caught. So what it was there was a very large, in the Mexican Congress, there was like a convention of these, I believe, coffee growers. And so there's places kind of mobbed anyway. And they noticed that these two guys kind of, you know, they kind of skirted the security. Right, so then these coffee growers confronted these guys. They had an amazing arsenal. They had bombs, they had dynamite, they had Glocks, they had unbelievable amount of hardware. So obviously they're arrested. There's a huge story across Mexico. This is less than a month. This is, well, a little more than a month. It's the 16th of October, 2001, that these Mossad agents tried to overthrow the Mexican, blow it up, tried to blow up the Mexican Congress and kill lots of people, you know. And what happens is, I guess it was a Sharon at the time or so, gets on the phone to, I guess, the president of Mexico, and very briefly there was this little Israeli jet that shows up, and these two people were taken back to Israel, and it was not reported at all in this country. And just those facts alone, and I think I gave the story pretty well. I think I'll find it and read it, because it's not that much. It's just amazing. The media, the Anglo-American media, is wholly incredible. And they obviously have these agendas that are absolutely 180 degrees from the truth. And they are the greatest enemy that we have. They are far greater than any vaccine or hurricane or earthquake or any type of natural, unnatural disaster. It is a war for your mind. I'm not trying to quote what's his name, but it's an information war, to quote Mikhail Gorbachev. The thing about what Georgia did to Ossetia, okay? At midnight, right when the Olympics were launching, Ossetia was raped by Georgia. They did these things that were unbelievable. They had their tanks run over ancestral graveyards, monuments, graves, hundreds and hundreds of years old. They raped that country, okay? Russia did the only sensible human thing to do, and they stopped it. And the Anglo-American media said it was some type of awful assault on Russia, of Russia on Georgia. And of course, what is it, Saakashvili, our little puppet government? We are surrounding Russia by this NATO. That, why does it exist? It should not exist. Unbelievable! This is terrorism. The only terrorism in the greatest terrorist nation and force in the world, for at least since the time of Lincoln, has been the United States of America. How many people have been murdered and blown up and immolated and just... It's got to stop! And you see, and as Ike points out, you know, that's not to say the people of this country. It's the people, as we pointed in last a couple weeks ago, you know, who is running the show is not the things that we see. It is not the American people. It is not these, you know, little puppets in the political world. Okay, and there's been, Ike does a great bit of work, you know, the Bilderbergs and the Trilateral Commissions and these types of things. Mm-hmm. is the evidence, and like what you say, and also check the evidence. You know, I'm not asking, I wouldn't want anyone to believe me based on what I have said. You know, I have taken the opinions and I have looked at the research of people who are experts into situations, and that's what I base my comments on, you know, and, you know, whatever.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, also, I think one of the phrases that came to my mind while you were saying that is, I think it was one of these phrases that came out in the Nuremberg trials, and I can't remember, it was one of the Nazi senior figures that said it, either Goebbels or Goering, and it was, you know, you just have to tell the people that they're being attacked.
Exactly.
And then, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's a communist country or a you know, parliamentary democracy or whatever, you just tell them that they're being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them to be patriotic and defend their country.
Mm-hmm.
And of course that comes down to the media. So if you've got the control of the media,
mm-hmm.
and you can get the message out that they are being attacked and the people are under threat, and you know, you can set up a few staged incidents and film them, or even just not actually stage, they're real incidents, but you put the wrong commentary on them,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you can move whole countries with a very sort of simple sort of stunt, really.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously 9/11 was taken to a new level with that kind of stunt pulling.
Hmm.
But the principle was the same, you know. And I think one of the serious problems is that the people that are actually in the media seem incapable of thinking. It's like they're given a script.
Uh-huh.
And if they depart from it, you know, they just sort of like become vacant. The brain falls out or something.
Uh-huh.
They can't deal with anything which is outside a certain set of parameters.
Well, yes, David Icke points that out so well. And I played that. Actually, it was the week before I spoke with you last. I played quite a bit of things from David Icke. The one 13-year-old. You know, commentary about it's so pertinent. It's like it was yesterday. I mean, it's the same.
Yeah,
the same thing.
Well, I think he's got a good perspective because he used to work. You know, he was as you might know, he was a sports presenter.
Yes,
we had a Saturday afternoon sports program which I used to watch sometimes as a child. You know, all the big sporting events it covered at the weekends, and he used to be the anchorman for that program. It was called Grandstand, and he did that probably for 3 or 4 years, so he was right in the center of the BBC's presentation team for
mm-hmm.
several years.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he would have got to know how things worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, it was interesting. I thought I could find that, but I'm sure I'll find it. I'm just going to the regular Google thing. We'll put Mossad or you know Mossad agents, and then it of course was. Let's see here. Stop talking. It was the 16 October 2001, and we'll put in Mexican Congress.
Yes, on rent.com.
Yes, hundreds of Mossad. Oh God, I don't know about that. Here we go. From the 15th of October. Who did this? Ernesto Cienfuegos, La Voz de Aslan. Mexican Attorney General releases Zionist terrorists. Army General and head of the PGR releases two Israelis arrested with guns and explosives inside the Mexican Congress. Again, by Ernesto Cienfuegos, La Voz de Aslan. Los Angeles, Alta California, October 15, 2001. In a mind-blowing development, La Voz de Aslan has learned that Mexican Army General Rafael Marcial Marquedo de la Concha, who heads the Procuraduría General de la República, Mexican Department of Justice, has released the retired Israeli Defense Forces Colonel and presumed Mossad agent Salvador Gerson Schmeck and Israeli illegal immigrant Saur Ben Zvi after both had penetrated the security of the Mexican Congress and were in possession of guns, hand grenades, and explosives. This morning, La Voz de Aslan had a personal telephone interview with the Mexican Congressional Press Secretary, Adriana Lopez, and verified the arrest of the two Israelis after they had entered through the highly secured front entrance of the Palacio Legislativo de San Lazaro. She stated to La Voz de Aslan that the two terrorists had taken advantage of the situation that occurred around 1700 hours Wednesday, October 10th, when a large contingent of sugar industry unionists were entering through the metal detectors. Two Israelis followed about 50 of the unionists to the office of the President of the Mexican Congress, Beatriz Paredes. The two Israelis were first pretending to be press photographers, but called the attention of the sugar unionists because of their nervous and out-of-ordinary behavior. About 10 of the unionists confronted them and observed that they were carrying guns and what looked to them to be explosives. They held the two Israelis until official congressional security personnel took them into custody. The head of the congressional security, Salvador Alcerón, verified that the Israelis had in their possession 9 hand grenades, sticks of dynamite, detonators, wiring, and 2 9mm Glock automatics. And it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. That was just the finishing of it. What were the Israelis up to? We think we know. Mm-hmm. The Vicente Fox government has been very careful of involving Mexico in a war against Islam. The Mexican population has well over 2 major oppositional political parties, the PRI and the PRD, will not allow it. President Bush and the U.S. Zionists want Mexico fully involved in the war, principally because if things get tough in the Middle East and the oil-rich Arabs leave the coalition, the U.S. military machine is going to need alternative sources of oil, and Pemex is just across the border. We believe that the two Zionist terrorists were going to blow up the Mexican Congress. The second phase was to mobilize both the Mexican and U.S. press to blame Osama bin Laden. Most likely, then, Mexico would declare war on Afghanistan as well, commit troops and all the oil it could spare to combat Islamic terrorism. You know, and this was just right out of the chute. Oh, and one of the points, I remember, less than a week after this little psyops there, we found out that 8 of these so-called hijackers were alive and 2 had already been dead. So, and all these things, like the plane, the silhouette of the blob, supposed to be the plane, comes out the other side of the building undamaged. And you see these things, or just broach a couple of these comments, and we've, you know, I've done, this story has, you know, it's over. It's just ridiculous. It was over from the beginning. And, you know, I guess I'd like to know exactly how many people, you know, I mean.
So, again, this is where it gets very weird, because you triggered off a memory of something which I was involved with, because in a small way, at the time, you know, you mentioned the hijackers being, you know, found alive, and that was reported by the BBC.
Oh yes, there was one irate. He's like a professional pilot. He flies like for a serious Arab airlines. Okay, he's a captain of one of these planes, right? And he's banging on the American consulate. What is this? What, you explain this to me? What is my face on this? Did they ever report that? No. Yeah. You still hear the 19 Arab hijackers. Who is brain dead enough to even take any of this seriously?
That's right. Those names are still on the FBI lists as well. They haven't, even knowing that they're alive, they haven't taken them off.
It's ridiculous.
It's just the whole bizarre. Thing. But what I came across in probably soon after 9/11, in fact, it's probably 2003, so it's a couple of years after. And this is one of the news reports I do remember hearing, because there's an MP in this country, a member of parliament, and he's called Michael Meacher. Is a Labour MP, and he had spoken out that the war on terror was bogus, and he actually wrote an article in the Guardian newspaper. It's still online, you can look it up. The war on terror is bogus. If you Google "the war on terror is bogus" by Michael Meacher, and you know, he points out some of the problems, and he mentioned that he thought 9/11 was to do with dwindling oil supplies and stuff, which of course.
Well, there's so many. I mean,
it's partly true, but yeah. So he got a name for himself, because he declared that the war on terror was bogus. Mm-hmm. I heard a news report on the BBC that the U.S. State Department had come on and they'd said that that they would only have taken his comments as being serious if he was a credible person.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was so. The story is just, you could go on forever and ever. How about all the gold bullion? Yeah. How about all the gold bullion taken out of the basements? Okay.
What was interesting to me about that particular story was that they tried to character assassinate Michael Meacher, who was a government minister. He was in Tony Blair's cabinet, early on. I think he was in Tony Blair's cabinet for about, I don't know, a couple of years, I think it was at least. He was Minister for the Environment. So he was, you know, a sort of senior British politician.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there was another British politician who criticised the war in Iraq and said, you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few days after he said that, he ended up dead.
Hmm. And oh, yeah, there's lots of people who ended up dead, like Michael Connell. Michael Connell.
Right, but this guy was, he was in also in Tony Blair's cabinet. Robin Cook was his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also in Tony Blair's cabinet. And this was several years after 9/11. I think mm-hmm. in 2006 he ended up mysteriously dying. Not long after he'd left the cabinet, he resigned over the something to do with the war in Iraq, I think. So
you know, there's just so many crazy parts of the story. Okay, here's something on Brass Tech TV. It's a brief commentary. Alex Jones interviews Dean Hoglund. I don't know if I'll play it. Okay. This is a fascinating interview for many reasons. Three that jump out are the clip of a television drama written in 2000 and broadcast in 2001 before the 9/11 psyops that described a government terror attack on the World Trade Center using a hijacked plane. The motivation? To increase arms sales. Shot in March of 2000, written in January of 2000. The routine canceling of financially successful programs that are critical of the government. The CIA's program of sending fake psychics to Hollywood parties to develop relationships with producers, directors, actors to see what projects they're working on before they're public announcement. The Operation Paperclip. I mean, just look at that. You know, Mockingbird? It was Mockingbird, I'm sorry. It had to be Mockingbird. The CIA thing, I think it was even in the 70s or even maybe before that, where they bagged that, you know, you won't read anything that we're not going to approve of to begin with. So that they had pretty much control of the entire U.S. media. But I don't know. Maybe I could start this. I mean, play some of it, see if it's. Actually, I guess it might have the same thing I have to do with the house DJ. It's not running. Well, it's an Alex Jones thing. So, what's your latest opinion of Alex Jones? And of course, I watched a good bit of the Obama decision. A lot of that was kind of obvious. It was really interesting. You know, it seems like I've played the comments of Mr. Alan Keyes. You know, I mean, some people can't stand him. If everyone has their own link. But basically, I can't find quarrel with his comments that Mr. Obama is a radical communist. And this whole thing about his citizenship, I think at this point, I mean, there were people suing him in court proceedings years ago, okay, when he was a senator. And this is an issue. I mean, this country, you cannot get any kind of job without positive identification. You know, they make all this survey. You know, are you a citizen? Are you, you know, illegal or not?
Mm.
And here it is, the president of this country doesn't have to do that. Huh.
It's very strange, isn't it? I followed a bit of the controversy over the Obama's
mm-hmm.
you know, birth certificate and that. I haven't really dug into it because, you know, I've basically been too busy looking at other things. I haven't seen the Obama deception.
Mm-hmm. I watched a good bit of it. They talk about the Bilderbergs,
right.
These people who had, of course, now this guy that falls around, I mean, David Icke brought that up in 96 in the talk I played from him. From that time. And, you know, so these people follow him around, and I think they had, you know, they say, oh, it's the queen, it's like this guy and that guy and all these major, you know, political people. But I think the last one was somewhere in Northern Virginia, I think they were. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's definitely some foul play, you know, going on in all of this, but exactly what, I'm not sure, you know. But we can see, obviously, from Obama's record so far that he's just a change of face,
uh-huh.
and it's basically the same machinery which is grinding away in the background.
Well,
you know.
Here's a little page I dug up. It's a brief, a little video, brasscheck.tv.com. Still no charges against Osama bin Laden 6 years later, 2007. Typically, when someone commits a crime and the government wants to prove the fact, an indictment is written up, the evidence is presented, and the alleged perpetrator is formally charged with the crime. The Bush gangsters have jailed and tortured thousands, invaded Afghanistan, and destroyed Iraq's society, resulting in the deaths of over 600,000 civilians since 2003. But remember now, this country, the United States, has been bombing at least weekly, at least every week. The depleted uranium has been distributed in that country. Unmerciful things, babies born inside out. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
Since 1992, Bush Father George started this business with his, you know, General Schwarzkopf and all the drama and all that stuff. Okay, yeah, whatever.
Stormy Norman.
Okay, 6 years later, they still have not gotten around to indicting or even formally seeking Osama bin Laden's arrest connection with the 9/11 attacks. Bin Laden's poster omits any 9/11 connection. This video has also been removed. I tried to play a little Alex Jones clip about the X-Files program that had this whole script, what was it, at least 6 months beforehand? I mean, isn't that just a little weird? I mean, maybe, who knows, maybe it's coincidental. But, yeah, how many things?
If you just do a search for Lone Gunman, you'll probably find it elsewhere on live video or on, you know, Massacre Cafe or... there's another one called Disclosed.tv, which is like a YouTube clone.
Okay.
That's got quite a lot of that sort of videos on there, you know. So I'm sure you'll pick up that. I've got a copy of that clip from The Lone Gunman. In fact, I think somebody gave me the whole episode.
Okay. Now, this is probably... How long is it? 8 minutes? I don't know.
It's a war game scenario that has to do with airline counterterrorism.
I don't know if you want to listen to her.
Why is that important enough to kill for?
Because it's no longer a game.
But if some terrorist group wants to act out this scenario, why target you for assassination?
Depends on who your terrorists are.
The men who conceived of it in the first place. You're saying our government plans to commit a terrorist act against a domestic airline?
There you go. Indicting the entire government, as usual. It's a faction. A small faction.
For what possible gain?
The Cold War's over, John. But with no clear enemy to stockpile against, the arms market's flat. But bring down a fully loaded 727 into the middle of New York City, and you'll find a dozen tin-pot dictators all over the world just clamoring to take responsibility and begging to be smart-bombed.
I can't believe it. This is about increasing arms sales. When?
Tonight.
How are you going to stop them? Why didn't you tell the world this? Go to the press.
You think I'd still be drawing breath 30 minutes after I made that call? The press? Who's going to run this story?
We would.
This? This is Birdcage Liner. Wild-eyed crap right up there with Elvis as an alien and two-headed babies.
You obviously read it.
Don't be so damn naive. Think this is going to save the world? I'm doing what I can, John. I don't have all the specifics on Scenario 12D, but I think I know the flight they've chosen. I still think we should call in a bomb threat. Let the FBI deal with this.
You said yourself we don't know the full extent of this conspiracy. We can't trust any government official. The only hope is to get on that plane.
Hey, John, are you still there?
Well,
now
that's two
problems
solved.
I don't know. I guess that just kind of gives you a basic idea. I guess they go more. It's only about, you know, not even half of it, but they go on. I think I watched this once, and they go into more details about the same story. You know, and it's just. I mean, maybe it's just a fascinating coincidence, but at some point, you know, that made me think. Well. Are you? How crazier would it be to be believing in the conspiracy or the coincidence? I mean, it's just whatever.
It's all very strange, but I think also that illustrates another bit of subliminal programming, because they put that story out there when it clearly shows in the episode The Lone Gunman, clearly shows the scene of the 747 heading towards the World Trade Center.
Oh, really? I'm at 3 minutes now. It's an 8 minute some clip, but it's kind of dark, and I don't know where they are. But I thought it was getting a little too not good for radio.
Yeah, if you watch it right through to the end, you'll see that it shows the passenger plane.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Heading to World Trade Center.
Yes, well, like I pointed out last time I talked to you a couple weeks ago about how the Oh, and also we had another one since. The little flyby, the little Obama's plane flyby, and people are freaking out. But you see, again, that's what a real plane looks like, right?
see it?
It does. It's a little. It's a, you can see. You can tell that it's Air Force One. And what is it doing?
Yeah.
Big planes like that, like Martinsburg is right here. We have C-5 traffic all over the place. Big planes like that, they look like they're hardly moving. They're so big, yeah. Even though they're going 150 knots or so, they're just. It looks like they're moving. So, and that, this is the second time, and well, of course, the bird thing in the Hudson, the ditching, that was what was some months ago, a few months ago. Mm-hmm. But basically, the same thing. That video shows a plane. Okay, it doesn't show a black blob traveling at 500, 600 miles an hour, which is, as we pointed out, structurally and aerodynamically impossible for the Boeing to do, et cetera.
Yeah. Also the sound as well. If you listen to, there are some videos of that flight, of the recent flyover, and you can hear clearly hear the plane's engine.
Yes.
You know.
And that was one of Dr. Judy Wood's points right immediately with the first time I talked to her, and she's very interesting. She's a very good educator. I think it would be very wonderful to have the class taught by Dr. Wood. But, you know, what she'll do is she'll give an example. She'll kind of pantomime or give an example of what she's about to present and have you figure it out, you know. And basically the idea was, you know, what would it sound like if a plane is crashing into something near you? You know, you would hear it coming from some distance, and then you would hear it, and then you'd be looking around. It's like, you know, what do I need to do? Do I need to run this way, that way, you know, grab some real estate, like, what do I got to do? Of course, like the one video, very famous, the gentleman looks up only after the explosion is, like, half over. You know, it's like...
Evan Fairbanks video,
You'd have heard something. You'd have been looking around for something.
Yeah, I'm just going to lick my ice cream for a minute. Oh, there's a huge, massive 747 that just crashed into the World Trade Center, right, just... You know, 2 seconds ago, I never noticed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. Well, that's one thing, too, the web, you know, I mean, it's this big, big party line, but, of course, obviously, you know, now you need to take for a grain of salt of what you see, but when something is researched and people that are, you know, serious individuals and they have logical arguments and just plain common sense, you know, just plain common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole story, you know, at some point, that's why I gave it up for some time, but I guess... Until it's resolved, I mean, it's an open wound, you know, and, I don't know.
It's so huge, though. I mean, you know, the implications as I see it now are so huge that, you know, the system by which we live in a system which we assume is, at some level, is fair and just and has some type of validity to it. But the scale of this deception and the scale of what's involved cannot really be dealt with by the system. I mean, I've been thinking that now for several years. In fact, I wrote an article about that. I think it was in 2004. So that was either 2004, 2005. So it was 4 or 5 years ago. I wrote this article, and I basically sort of said in that I thought that the existing systems by which we live can't deal with the truth of 9/11.
And
I still say that now, because if you look, for example, at how many church figures have commented on 9/11.
There you go. What you were reminding me of is an old skepticus, Mr. Bill Hicks. I'm sure, well, he passed away a little some time ago. But I remember one thing he said. He said basically our political and religious institutions are crumbling. They're crumbling because they're no longer relevant. I mean, nobody takes them seriously. There was a thing about NPR. Recently, there was some kind of poll, and that there were people of faith, I guess, a Christian faith, and how they were. They wanted to find some type of religion that was satisfying for them, but they would just, several of them, they'd been through several, and they were just disillusioned with the whole, because, you know, it's just a business. It's just not, it's just, you know, it's an awful business. Whatever. David Icke pointed all those points in great detail. You know, it really, you know, whatever.
You know, and a lot of them, I mean, I for example, you know, just as probably you as well, we have the Jehovah's Witnesses calling round.
Oh, yes. Actually, yes. Let's see. I'm not sure.
I have a lot of respect for the Jehovah's Witnesses because, you know, because they are good people and they do, you know, they do actually get off their backsides and do something because they're ministers. They're all ministers. And so they have to, they took part of their, you know, promise as being Jehovah's Witnesses that they will go around and spread the word. You know, and of course, I think they're completely wrong in terms of the word that they're spreading, because, you know, and this is a conversation I have with them, but I respect them for actually taking action, you know, doing something.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
And but what, you know, they come to me and say, you know, some of them say, well, you know, it says in the Bible, if you look at the book of Genesis, you know, that first there was darkness, and then God, you know, said, let there be light, and they'll go on for a few minutes, and I'll say to them, well, have you heard of Enuma Elish?
No.
And they'll say, what? And I'll say, Enuma Elish.
Yes, Mesopotamian.
And then I'll say, yeah, and I'll say it's a Sumerian script that the Genesis was copied from.
Mm.
And go, oh,
absolutely.
Oh, I've not heard of that.
And
you know, and you could say that for most Christian faiths.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll say to the Jehovah's Witnesses, who founded the Jehovah's Witnesses? And they'll say, I don't know. And I'll say, well, it was Charles Taze Russell. He founded the Bible Watchtower Group.
Okay.
You know, and then I tell them that this guy is buried under an 8-foot pyramid.
Ah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And is this 8-foot pyramid a Christian symbol? I mean, it wasn't the last time I checked, you know? So, you know, you look at these things and see the symbolism and see the patterns,
mm-hmm.
and pretty quickly you can see that there is this underlying set of controls that have been put in place by these various groups. You call them the Illuminati, or
You're saying too. You know, I reference a lot, and I still got to do it. I've been saying this, I think, from day one that I've done this, is that there was a John Romer. Hopefully, he's still with us. I don't know what he's done lately. He had a BBC Channel 4 production, Testament, the Bible, and History. It was 1988, and I got a VHS copy some time ago. It's Films for the Humanities, but last time I tried to find it, I don't think it's even available anymore. So, it was very, what he did, we went through the Bible, and just what you're saying, the same story. He was like, he said that, basically, to cut to the chase, that the writers of Genesis, he said basically that Mesopotamia, you're good scientists, but you're lousy moralists, because they had a different role. The writers of Genesis had a different role for God after the creation myth, but by structure and number, it's the exact same story, you know. And he just goes on things like that, and also points out some stories, maybe the New Testament, that could maybe actually, you know, some true occurrence. But you know, most, it's deeply symbolic, like the Adam and Eve story. You know, we've covered that. You know, Adam is reason, and Eve is feeling, and the Kundalini is the serpent, is this a life force that comes up, and it starts, I guess, at the sacrum, the pelvis. It entwines around the spine. It intersects. These three positive, negative, neutral forces intersect at our chakras, and you know, that kind of thing. And
yeah, I mean, that's all very interesting, you know, and you know, bits and pieces, but. You know, one of the things which I find kind of contradictory about the Christian Church, because obviously many things, but one basic thing I can mention is, for example, I think it was 2006, the Gospel of Judas.
Mm-hmm.
The Gospel of Judas was brought forward.
Well, that's a point that Romer makes at this time in 1988, that there was at that time, you see, he called it it was an Oxsh layer. It was a layer in the sediment, which I think either somehow had preserved all of this, it had preserved the material that these little gospels, contemporaries of this individual, I guess there's a Yosef name, there's a Esau, whatever, but there's, he said, at least about 30 gospels. You know,
yeah,
so I mean,
yeah, I've got the number up to 40, but yeah, go on.
Well, that was 88, you know, so
yeah, and what you know, I find difficult is that the church, the Christian church, is meant to be kind of based around the idea of enlightenment, and of course, in past times, it was really through the church that one got an education. You know, that was the way that you were educated, through the church, but yet. The Christian churches that I know of, they wouldn't sort of, you know, have a Sunday sermon, you know, and say, oh, well, you know, we've just discovered the Gospel of Judas and it's just been translated.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if you look into the history of that, when I found out about it, although it was put into the press in 2006, this thing was discovered 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's time enough for we should know about it. You know, Romer really points about the series of translations and all the different people.
Yeah.
Irenaeus was a good figure right there for a while. The different translations, you know, and the thing is, well, there's a book, Holger Christen, a German, wrote. It was very interesting work about. The Shroud of Turin was one thing, made a very good circumstantial case. This is an actual burial shroud, you know, which really destroys the problem, the story, the official story. But he said that Christianity, instead of the gospel of Jesus became a gospel about Jesus a la Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, and then Emperor Constantine, he's the one, his secretary actually, Romer Pontius Hoc, is the one that came up with the Trinity, you know, the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. It's very mysterious. It's up there in heaven. Constantine is down here on his throne. And for like 1,400 years, that whole thing went throughout Europe. Christianity was a system of social control because you had to obey the king because he was your way to Jesus, who is your way to God. You know, and it's just, wow. Hopefully, you know, I guess the Dark Ages didn't really get much brighter, huh? We've got some technological gizmos that are interesting, but other than that, I think we're, for the most part, the Dark Ages still.
And I think, you know, if you look at what was predominant before Christianity and things like, I don't know a lot about this, but, you know, I've touched on it in the sort of stuff that I've read, and that's the Gnostic teachings,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, were based on this secret knowledge, as I think they called it.
The ones who knew, I guess it means know or knowledge in Greek or something.
Yeah, and a lot of that is based on this, I think, this idea of an inner sort of spiritual evolution that each one of us, you know, can go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about externalizing it.
Yes.
I think that was, to me, that was one of the masterstrokes of whoever sort of set up the basic Christian beliefs, in that they externalized a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
They said that it was God's will.
Mm.
You know, so if something happened that was bad,
mm.
it was God's will.
Oh.
You know, and so you were discharging your responsibility to effect change onto this.
Yeah. Well, see, from the Vedic perspective, you can say that that's true, but that's, you know, there's action, there's karma, karma. You know, for in physics was, you know, for each force there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yes.
You know, so this is the understood, you know, so I mean, that's really what's happening. So there are no innocent bystanders. So you set the point of the, you know, the self has always existed, always will exist. And these are just, I like David Icke's thing, the genetic spacesuit that we're wearing momentarily.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
Well, actually, the changing body, it's constantly changing. So reincarnation, as long as you're in this incarnation, you're constantly getting a new and different body. So yeah. Death is just another, I like the term, the maha samadhi, like the kriya yogi thing. That's the whole point of the kriya yoga, is you develop your clairvoyance skills and you get good at, you know, astral projection and such, and then you get to a point where you just don't have to come back. I mean, there are guides. Here are so many of these things. You know, your guardian angel, I guess, or you know, these. You're never alone. You know, there's just so many layers to reality, and all these things that have been pointed out. You know, David Icke goes into that a lot too. But yes, the Rudolf Steiner book, and I really should try. I really should try to present this. It's amazing. I haven't really read very much of it. I read part, but it's called. The Knowledge of Higher Worlds and Its Attainment. You know, he wrote this some time ago. It says copyright here in 1947, but I think he wrote this about 30 years before that.
Oh, yes.
And see, I first heard, got this name from the book Secret Life of Nature. The, I mentioned about it, well, last hour, but Peter Tompkins. Yeah. Very, very interesting book, and I guess he has a whole lot of books. Last time I mentioned that, there was somebody called up, said they were a fan, and they had like about a dozen books or something of Mr. Peter Tompkins. Very interesting book about nature spirits, and did it very well. I don't know. But Sherry Tenpenny, I tried to actually talk to her assistant earlier in the week, and she was in Mexico City, and I guess he was made to leave. And I didn't try to call them back, but I guess their office, you know, they were rather, everyone was calling them and emailing them and whatever. But, I talked to her a couple years ago, Sherry Tenpenny. I think her site now is like drtenpenny.com, I think.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And it's just common sense, really. All this stuff, really. It's not anything, So have you talked with Dr. Wood lately at all, or at all in any way, or email or something, or what's she doing?
She's keeping herself busy. What we tend to do is we do exchange emails over some of the latest sort of developments on the internet, because we can see certain patterns, you know, the way that forums posts spring up, and there's still an ongoing effort to kind of debunk the research, and we've had one or two people waking up to the bigger picture, which the research kind of opens up, you know.
Yeah.
And then you'll see various little blips of this on the internet and some traffic coming into our websites, and then you can sort of follow where all these internet trolls come on and post the same old debunking arguments that have been recycled for the last 2 years, really. And so, you know, we have sort of communicated over that sort of thing. You know, I do know she's still been doing some ongoing research, but I'm not sort of party to the details, and I'm not sure what her plans are for that. But I know she's still working away on various things. And the one thing I can tell you actually is Dr. Wood's attorney Jerry Leithart, he actually gave a speech at the UN.
Really?
Last Friday.
Really? Concerning the case?
Yeah. I put it on my YouTube account actually. You'd maybe like to. It's actually how much? It's only about 3 minutes long, so we've probably got time to play it.
Okay, sure.
What he said.
Yeah, we got about 12 minutes.
Which email are you checking at the moment? I'll send you the link. And
you can go to the interviews 897. Yeah, my email for the little program is interviews 897 at Yahoo.
Okay, let me just.
Yeah, the Rudolph Center. Yeah. Try to do that.
Because basically he went over there, I didn't know he'd gone over there because he just sent me this link to the Geneva website. He was over in Geneva, and he gave this speech. It was actually about racism.
Okay.
That was the sort of general theme of it. But in this 3 minute speech, he brought up 9/11, and he mentioned that one of his written statements was censored because the way this conference works is you submit these written statements and then they're posted on the sort of conference proceedings website or intranet, and he submitted his statement and then they censored it because it mentioned 9/11, and then in his oral presentation he mentioned that his submission had been censored. And he spoke about 9/11. But let's just get this link.
Well, what you brought up last time we spoke 2 weeks ago about the extremely interesting coincidence about Professor Stephen Jones and how he was a great trying to debunk someone who had written, I guess, a reasonable treatise on the possible existence of cold fusion. And then you said this individual, I forget the name, mentioned Stephen Jones on like 100 and some pages of this book.
Yeah.
And then just recently, well, 8 or so months after this other gentleman dies, then Jones starts coming out with the thermite thing and the... common sense point of the wreckage. Look at the pictures. It's just very simple. And that's the thing, like no wreckage. Then in terms of planes, and in terms of buildings, and in terms of, and it's just so obvious. It's amazing the effect. These psyops techniques are just, and this is basically lying. A lie repeated was a linen. A lie repeated often enough becomes a truth.
That's right.
It's
but
really
it's
very
worth,
simple.
It's probably worth mentioning that point because it is very very important. In that, as I mentioned, the Stephen Jones cold fusion research into what was called muon catalyzed cold fusion, where they were trying to induce some type of fusion reaction, I think, by introducing either neutrons or some other radiation into the reaction, which would trigger off this nuclear effect. And that was what Jones apparently was doing, so he said. And it was Dr. Eugene Malov, who used to work at MIT. He was chief science writer at MIT, lead science writer, rather. And then Malov was actually murdered in May 2004. And then it was about 18 months later that Steve Jones came on the 9/11 scene.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a feeling that Malov would have been around when he saw Jones come onto the scene.
Mm-hmm.
He would have realized immediately that 9/11 and cold fusion were related. In other words, the energy cover-up and the terrorism cover-up were being done by the same group.
Oh, yeah.
And that, and that group was putting Jones forward as an op, basically.
Well, I'm at Morgan Reynolds' side. I hadn't heard anything from him. It doesn't look like he's updated it in quite some time. But at the bottom, there's some videos, and I have this one here. It's a CNN thing, and it's just, you know, the whole cookie-cutter thing, and, of course, the building. That was actually, I had Joseph Keith, retired aerospace engineer or designer for... Oh, yeah, maybe it's talking to him. Let's see what he says here. I think it's...
Really? I mean, how stupid can you think people are to believe that crap?
Okay, I don't know. That was, but that was just talking about the cookie cutter,
thing going, stealing cuts. How? You don't see anything bending, anything crunching. Think of those things cutting hole in steel beams going in the building. I mean, how stupid can you think people are to believe that crap?
And that was the gentleman, Joseph Keith, he designed the shaker system for Boeing. We talked about that a lot last couple weeks ago. We talked. But,
yeah.
And it's just on and on. It never stops. I mean, so the story is, so what are we going to do? You know, I mean, that's why, for the longest time, I didn't want to talk about this because the attitude was, well, okay, we've gone over all the, you know, what other point is there to, you know, there's probably something, but I mean, we have. So, but then it's not going anywhere. You know, I mean, it's there, and our lives are controlled because of it. And it's just.
You know, I mean, the way I'm looking at it is I'm still trying to give out information to people who are interested in receiving it, and I'm getting a sort of trickle of a response. You know, I sell discs at cost price through my website, and, you know, I've had somebody ordered 28 discs from me this week.
Oh, really?
So, and I've got another guy who just wants a big batch because he goes to various events, and yeah, I think he gives them out. And so I am getting the discs out there, you know, slowly. But what I'm not really getting is anybody who's willing to sort of distribute them and copy them themselves. You know, I'm having to copy them all myself and give them out. But nevertheless, there is interest out there. But it's not goes in fits and starts, basically. It doesn't seem to be. Decreasing, it doesn't seem to be increasing, you know, it's just a steady trickle. So, you know, but I think ultimately the what's going to happen is that people are going to have to make a choice between the institution and their own judgment. I did send you that link to Jerry's speech on the YouTube link, so if you wanted to get that going.
Okay, let's see here.
You might be able to see that come in now.
Okay, R.E. Jerry Lepperts.
It's
just about to open. Attorney Jerry Lepperts mentioning 9/11 at Geneva UN meeting, 24 April 2009. It shows President and Secretary, and I'm not sure why it's loading, but it's not. The video is frozen. Let's see if there's any people think.
It may take a while to start.
It says, focus on the objectives of this conference. She's saying to an empty auditorium. They're speaking to no one.
There was a small number of people there. It wasn't a lot of people.
Let's see. I never really look at the comments much of anything anyway. But it's weird. It's loading, but it's just not playing.
Try refreshing it.
Let's see. So it is 5 hours. So it's almost midnight your time?
Yeah, it's just about mine.
Now gives the floor to the Professional Institute for Advanced Wound Recovery. You have the floor.
Good afternoon, Madam President. My name is Jerry Lepart. I am the Chief Legal Officer of the Professional Institute for Advanced Wound Recovery. At approximately 3:30 p.m. yesterday, an internal UN communication was read to me stating that my organization's written statement would not be published in this conference's intranet. Madam President, before I start my oral presentation, I must request assistance of your good office to reverse that instance of discrimination and of censorship. I assure you, the language of my organization's written statement was appropriate and moderate, as is our custom. We have published other written statements that are part of the UN's archives, including statements made at Durban and afterwards. Madam President, our written statement did make mention of the need for reparations arising out of the transatlantic slave trade, and we referenced our home country's inappropriate boycott of this conference. We also indicated that we would be petitioning the Oxford English Dictionary to have the word anti-Semite and its derivatives removed from the lexicon because that word is incongruent. It excludes Palestinians, Arabs, and persons of Middle Eastern descent from its protective aura and is limited to protecting the interests of present-day Israelis who are, by and large, of Eastern European descent and who are not ethnically Semitic. Thus, that word is incongruent and exclusionary and violates the spirit of the DDPA. Our statement also linked the events of 11 September 2001 to racism and to xenophobia, not just because that event thwarted the ability to call attention to the DDPA, which concluded mere days prior to 9/11, but also because the almost instantaneous ability to blame Arabs for the event served to deflect attention from the fact that the event itself has never been fully analyzed, investigated, nor properly explained. We noted that even if you assume jetliners hit the World Trade Center, that they are mere hollow aluminum tubes and that jet fuel is mere kerosene, which is not even flammable, let alone powerful enough to melt steel and almost instantaneously turn it to dust, as was seen to have happened. The events of 9/11 are to this day an unexplained mystery, yet in immediately blaming Arabs, we have in fact experienced a serious event of xenophobia, to put it no more strongly than that. Madam President, the outcome document of the DRC has received little or no praise, in sharp contrast to the amount of praise the President, Madam High Commissioner, and Mr. Yuri Boshinka have received. By way of analogy, one of PIAWR's areas of endeavor, healthcare, what has been said here is equivalent to saying the surgery was a success, but the patient died. Madam Chairman, Madam President, there is but one world and one humanity, with none having neither greater nor lesser rights or claims than anyone else. We are all the same. Thank you.
I thank the speaker for his statement and wish to draw the attention of all speakers that they must please focus their statements on the objectives of this conference.
WSHC Shepherdstown, we're pretty close to 7, 1900, and then I guess, but now, can we refresh this? You're on daylight savings, right? So when the BBC says, they say, okay, right now they would be saying 2100 GMT, right? Not 23. No, not 23. Nine times three is, okay, or whatever.
Yeah, it'd be 2300 GMT, but yeah. It's OOBST.
Well, you know, I don't know what, there were so many things running through my mind listening to that. I mean, now, how long ago was this?
This
the
24th
of
this
April.
It
was like
a week ago. No coverage.
Wow. That is like, oh, and now, you know, you know what? When I first played this,
you've more or less got an exclusive there, Doug.
Did you hear? Now, listen to this. Now, I heard this at first. I almost stopped and pointed it out. But I'm going to start to replay it. I'm going to turn all the way up and listen. There's a whispering voice. Now, listen to this whispering voice. Now, see, when I first heard this, I thought, is this some kind of joke? Is this crazy or what? But wait a minute, hold on.
And now gives the floor to the Professional Institute for Advanced.
That was weird. I don't know what that was. Oh, well.
And now gives the floor to the Professional Institute for Advanced Wound Recovery.
So, I guess the next program is not coming in. It came in a little late. I could go a little bit more But I don't know. It's like, where do we go from here? You know, we have to change. And the only choice is peaceful. Every time they have these meetings, they have these, it's been proven over and over and over, these provocateurs, you know, they start smashing something and giving the police a reason to tromp down on people.
Yeah. It does happen.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I mean, that, you know, that thing you just played.
Mm-hmm. Rather amazing.
If you look at the YouTube video views on it, it's absolutely no.
Rather interesting.
It's had about 93 views, something like that.
95 views.
Yeah, there you go.
Get this. Here's this.
Good afternoon.
Listen to this whispering voice. See, I'm not completely crazy. Wait a minute. Okay, here we go. It starts there. All right, let me turn. I got an air conditioner on. Okay. I guess when the lady stops talking, where did she stop talking? She stopped talking.
Recovery.
Okay,
you
now listen. Cool. Listen.
I'd have to listen to it here, I think.
I'm going to start it over. I turned off the air conditioner. Excuse me. Do you have a business card? I'm from Toronto. We've been watching what happened to your group.
Good afternoon, Madam President. My name is Jerry Leapart.
It's interesting. I have a business card from Toronto. We've been watching what's been happening to your group. It's a whispering voice. You have to listen to it. Turn it up, and you know, whatever, whatever. It's the very beginning. It's pretty cool. So maybe we have a scoop within a scoop. What do you think?
Maybe we do. Maybe you do. If yeah, I'll give
listen,
a listen.
Listen to that whisper. Once the lady stops talking, there's a voice whispering. It's like somebody introducing themselves. They have a business card there from Toronto. We've been watching what's been happening to your group. It sounds very interesting. And I heard that the first time. I'm like, what is going on here? Is this real? But it looks real. United Nations webcast. UN.org/webcast. And that was the 24th, which was, let's see, that was the, was it Monday? Was that Monday?
Last Friday, I think it was.
Well, okay, exactly. I'm looking at the calendar. Yeah, last Friday, 24th. That would be 31, yes. 31 minus 7 would be 24. Yeah, my math skills are... So, it's just this story is rather interesting, and I think that, what did you comment? You said the cat is out of the bag. It's running around the room. They're trying to get the dog... after it to get rid of the cat, but I think I don't think it's working. I think the dog has made friends with the cat. You know. I don't know.
That's possible. Maybe that's maybe the dog is from Toronto.
Very interesting. Yeah, listen to the voice. But I don't know. So I guess maybe we should wind it up. But so what do you think? It's just impossible. I don't know what to even try to even predict anything what might happen, or you know, enough people going to wake up, or
the whole issue of Obama
not being president and all this craziness. It's like,
I was up until 1 o'clock yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it is yesterday morning now. Finishing that press release because I was so, I was very concerned. That they were going to try and use this this swine flu scam to start to try and restrict people's movements or try out various draconian add-ons to the law, particularly with the story that was in this country where children were kept in at a college and given Tamiflu treatment take before they would let them out.
Wow, against their will, huh? That's something.
Yeah, I believe so. That's what the story suggested. Now, I haven't sort of rung anybody up, you know, who was involved. This was at a place called Paynton. So, you know, again, we're getting the police involved in the, because there was this one girl who supposedly had a bit of flu symptom.
I've heard a lot
the
of
police involved in
just
that.
Draconian reports, and I wish I could remember the initial reason. This one gentleman, the police took him in. And the reason it was just so spurious, I think he wasn't being a threat or challenging them or, you know, harsh language or anything. I think maybe he might have questioned why they were questioning him or something. But they drag him in, they do a DNA swab, on his saliva, I guess. And now they have this big profile on him, and they let him go. I mean, and even one thing, now this may sound a little weird, but I thought about me, you know, I just was looking, I had given blood, you know, I was pretty young, but this has been a long time ago, and I thought I'd look into it.
Yeah.
Well, now, it's just weird, they wanted positive ID. Now, okay, my logic is thinking, like, you're taking a blood, you need blood donation. I mean, you're going to test it anyway, right? You're going to test it to see if you can use it. So why would it really matter about the person positively identifying themselves? Okay, they say, well, maybe, you know, they just don't want you to give too much, and then it hurts. But, you know, it's not like you're getting money for this or anything. And then, for understand, is when you get through the next phase, there's all these personal questions, like a huge number of these personal questions. And then I'm walking away, well, I'm gonna do it. And I thought about, you know, so I remember the gentleman, you know, the DNA swabbing the police in London do, you know, talk about a DNA sample. You know, pint of blood. Mm-hmm. That's quite the DNA sample. And all it's just really weird, you know. I mean, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought. I don't think I'm going to be doing
it's
that.
But
actually, though, I think in this country, I've heard that after probably like the 70s or into the 70s, or, well, probably, anyway, that there had been DNA samples taken from every American born. Somehow the process, you're in a hospital and they do something and there's this DNA sample. I forget where I heard that, but it sounded pretty reasonable.
Wouldn't surprise me.
But really, in a sense, you know, I'm not trying to think, you know. Yeah, I'm not trying to think. Hopefully I can stop thinking here. I don't know. I'm actually, I guess, maybe a little more optimistic than I was. I mean, it was great. Maybe I should play that again. It was very interesting. It's not very long. It's 4 minutes. Let me play it one more time, if you don't mind. It made a very interesting number of points, but try to listen to that whisper again. I'm kind of fascinated about this whisper.
And now give the floor to the Professional Institute for Advanced Wound Recovery. You have the floor.
Good afternoon, Madam President. Good afternoon.
I'm sorry about that. What I tried to do was, okay, it's clearly, I got you. Here's my business card. I'm from Toronto. We've been watching what's been happening in your group. And then he says something after that, which I haven't been able to make out. That's why I was trying to repeat that and find out. It sounded, I don't know if you're talking about euros or, I don't know, it just said something else, but whatever. I guess now that I did that, let me play what the gentleman actually says, which is, I think, ultimately quite a bit more interesting.
Good afternoon, Madam President. My name is Jerry Leapheart. I am the Chief Legal Officer of the Professional Institute for Advanced Wound Recovery. At approximately 3:30 p.m. yesterday, an internal UN communication was read to me stating that my organization's written statement would not be published in this conference's intranet. Madam President, before I start my oral presentation, I must request assistance of your good office to reverse that instance of discrimination and of censorship. I assure you, the language of my organization's written statement was appropriate and moderate, as is our custom. We have published other written statements that are part of the UN's archives, including statements made at Durban and afterwards. Madam President, our written statement did make mention of the need for reparations arising out of the transatlantic slave trade, and we referenced our home country's inappropriate boycott of this conference. We also indicated that we would be petitioning the Oxford English Dictionary to have the word anti-Semite and its derivatives removed from the lexicon because that word is incongruent. It excludes Palestinians, Arabs, and persons of Middle Eastern descent from its protective aura and is limited to protecting the interests of present-day Israelis who are, by and large, of Eastern European descent and who are not ethnically Semitic. Thus, that word is incongruent and exclusionary and violates the spirit of the DDPA. Our statement also linked the events of 11 September 2001 to racism and to xenophobia, not just because that event thwarted the ability to call attention to the DDPA, which concluded mere days prior to 9/11, but also because the almost instantaneous ability to blame Arabs for the event served to deflect attention from the fact that the event itself has never been fully analyzed, investigated, nor properly explained. We noted that even if you assume jetliners hit the World Trade Center, that they are mere hollow aluminum tubes and that jet fuel is mere kerosene, which is not even flammable, let alone powerful enough to melt steel and almost instantaneously turn it to dust, as was seen to have happened. The events of 9/11 are to this day an unexplained mystery, yet in immediately blaming Arabs, we have in fact experienced a serious event of xenophobia, to put it no more strongly than that. Madam President, the outcome document of the DRC has received little or no praise, in sharp contrast to the amount of praise the President, Madam High Commissioner, and Mr. Yuri Boshinka have received. By way of analogy, one of PIAWR's areas of endeavor, healthcare, what has been said here is equivalent to saying the surgery was a success, but the patient died. Madam President, there is but one world and one humanity, with none having neither greater nor lesser rights or claims than anyone else. We are all the same. Thank you.
I thank the speaker for his statement and wish to draw the attention of all speakers that they must please focus their statements on the objectives of this conference.
UN.org/webcast. Attorney Jerry Lippert, Geneva UN meeting, the 24th of April, 1 week ago today. I don't know. You know, it's pretty obvious. Very obvious points. Unfortunately, we are hearing these, 8 years after the fact, pretty much.
It was interesting that he brought up, the Israeli sort of issue with anti-Semitism and things like that.
That's what I wanted to comment on. And, of course, we have a little disclaimer, which I guess I'm supposed to do, and I think I find it very childish and whatever, but I did do my disclaimer, and I'm sure this is supposed to be officially upsetting. What I'm about to say is supposed to be officially, probably even hate speech, which is an interesting concept about evidence that's not popular.
Mm.
Anyway, so here's my thought. Now, I don't know much about the president of Iran. I don't even know if I can say his name. The thing was, I had heard a couple comments, what were purported to be his statements about the situation of Israel. And actually, this man reiterated quite a few points of them, that this state was artificially created. It is completely out of the bounds of Judaism. It is not a Jewish state. There can be no Jewish state. We had the right honorable Rabbi David Weiss twice, and he explains this. This is Judaism 101. And, that Israel was mostly populated by criminals from America and Russia. There are quite a few people, I think, that escaped Russia because they would be tried as some type of, serious mafia gangster type, etc., those types of things. And I can remember vaguely there was some horrible bombing one time in, I think it was like a Muslim school or something, and these children were killed or something. And this guy that did it, he was like trying to look all Jewish and everything. He spoke American English, So, yes, funny it is not. But
yeah,
really, all the things he said about Israel seem to be perfectly true. And then of course he's real. This racism conference, that was a couple weeks ago, was it?
Obama
refused to go to it. And then everybody said it was like this horrible, racist thing against Israel. And then when this president of Iran got up, these people made a big little scene and walked out and all this. But from what I heard that he said, it just seems completely logical and reasonable. What did he say that was so untrue? This thing about the truth should not be afraid of scrutiny. If you have a story and you want us to believe it, shouldn't you give some evidence to the... validity of the story? What's wrong with that? This attitude that, my story is so true and so correct that it is beneath me to respond to your disagreement of part of my story, basically. This is ridiculous. We need to grow up. We need to be grown-ups. Can we be grown-up human beings? I don't know. It's really ridiculous.
But yeah, I started late. I'm almost done. I started half an hour late, so I thought I would do my 2 hours. So 2 hours. Actually, what we're going to do, and Andrew, probably you could do this of yourself and Dr. Judy Wood. And plus, because coming up here in the summer, I guess I won't be able to be here. So I need to produce these ahead of time, which would probably be much cleaner. We can record them, and if there's any problems or something you want to change, we can change it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see we have automation. We can put it in the automation. So really, we could do these programs, a week, days before, and then plug them in, and then they would just come on in the automation. I wouldn't have to worry about coming in here and things falling apart and things not working and, whatever. Okay, so what do you want to say? We got 14 or so minutes. I mean, I don't even think I brought up all those points about, I went off on the Mossad agents trying to blow up the Mexican Congress.
Yeah.
Of course, the so-called hijackers, anomalies of that. I think I also, that one with firefighter, it was Diane Sawyer was on the ground there at Ground Zero with the firefighter.
Yeah,
and
last week.
Whatever, things like that.
Yeah.
And as we're saying, the story is just so huge and so unwieldy. And something like that in 2 hours, I mean, that's like a school class. It's like, it would be like the equivalent of covering an entire serious semester course in 2 hours in one class. You can't do it. There's no way. There's so much information. There's so much evidence. And a lot of times, you forget it. It's like a language. Like, I remember re-listening to some things I'd done a couple years ago, and this was some months ago. I was listening to myself talk to this guy, and I was like, wow, I remember that now. It was just all these little eddies and back rooms and closets of this stupid story. And I just, whatever. Yeah, I'll have to get... Actually, maybe it would be a good subject, this Rudolf Steiner type of work, the secret world, of the secret and the knowledge of higher worlds, maybe kind of get into that. Because that is ultimately our evolution. It's where we should be anyway. But all this stuff that's, we always got to be blowing each other up and all this stuff that's, why? Why does it happen in it's kind of obvious. The World War One general, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler. I read that. It's like 70 pages. It's War is a Racket, and he's talking about the war from his perspective in World War One.
Mm.
And I wanted to. Anyway. So it's just been going on now for, I guess, what David Icke pointed out, it's, maybe even. Millennia.
Well, I mean, one thing I read somewhere with regard to the wars is that they seem to have been continually, scaling them up. And what I mean is that there were
destructiveness.
There was feudalism.
Yes.
And then there was sort of tribal warfare.
Okay.
And then there was this war between states. Civil war, both in the United Kingdom and in the states.
Uh-huh.
And then it was. International war, and the next stage, of course, is global war, or even interplanetary war, which, interestingly enough, Paul Hellyer mentioned interplanetary war when he spoke about Colonel Corso's book The Day After Roswell, Hellyer was considered that Colonel Corso's book was legitimate. As many people do, I have one or two reservations, but I think there must be a lot of truth in it. And Paul Hellyer did, sort of use this term that he thought that we could be getting involved in an interplanetary war, through the events of Roswell, the Roswell crash. Maybe that ties into this. And you said earlier on that 9/11 was a demonstration. Maybe that was part of it.
I think Dr. Webb, remember Dr. Wood saying about that maybe it was like to impress the Russians or something. But really, when you get on this level of manipulation, it could be the people at the top. So they're probably at one point. I think David Icke points out is basically 13 families, or basically the whole. So I mean, this nation against nation kind of is this further distraction. I mean, we're kept fighting with each other on every imaginable subject, whatever, racial, everything. I mean, just. But now
of
this.
Then again, you say we're all fighting, but. You don't have to fight in one sense.
Exactly.
There are people who've got peace, inner peace, and they've made that decision. So I think this is where we get the duality, where we do have a lot of war and conflict, but there are, nevertheless, within that, there are people who are in state of total peace, and they are able to live peaceably. So it sounds a bit like a paradox, but it's not, you know. Anyway, that's just a thought.
Uh-huh. Now, this I have this going. Is this supposed to be like an artist rendition or something? Or is this
which one?
It's a day after Roswell. I mean.
Oh, are you aware of Colonel Corso or and his work?
Okay, I guess is this some type of little museum somebody made up with?
No. Well, Day After Roswell is a book. You know, you can get it, and it's written by Bill Burns and Colonel Philip J. Corso. Philip J. Corso was a U.S. Army colonel, and he said that he worked at the Foreign Technology Desk in the U.S. Army, and that was where the official sort of function was that they would capture, you know, crashed Russian planes or crashed enemy planes, basically, and then sort of return them to a base and then take them apart and look at the technology. You know, obviously it was foreign technology.
Well,
how it got its name.
That was corroborated by Jan Lompert and people he knew in, I guess, South Africa, how the U.S. government, there was no one was more interested in these types of things than U.S. military because they wanted to get to the technology first or something.
And Corso, you know, said that foreign technology extended to stuff that was off-planet. This was what the Roswell crash was, that it was a disk which had come from somewhere else.
Here's a report from David Brinkley, and I guess maybe that's over the years. Let me just replay this little bit of this.
Thrills from Roswell and elsewhere are not all that, well, alien a concept. In fact, a Dateline poll revealed 50% of adults surveyed, they believe the U.S. government has concealed information when it comes to aliens and UFOs.
And some witnesses reported that UFOs were shaped like hamburgers, even Big Macs.
What's behind all the recent reports of
weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently?
For the last 50 years, the American public has conducted its own search for intelligent life in the universe. And these days, on the scores of websites and chat rooms that examine every aspect of the UFO phenomenon, you can find Colonel Corso's blockbuster story. And wait till they hear the rest of his story. Corso says that in 1961, he was posted to the Pentagon for the Office of Foreign Technology, with one of the most secret assignments in history, custody of the actual Roswell UFO wreckage. And the book says Corso was ordered by his superiors to share the alien secrets with military contractors.
We planted the seed, and then we see how the progress was going.
And those seeds, Corso claims to have sowed, yielded an operator's manual for the millennium, an incredible array of inventions, all, he says, reverse-engineered by American corporations from alien technology.
Well, let's go through a list. Here's a very simple version of fiber optic. The first time you saw fiber optic...
It was in a little bundle.
In that flying saucer debris.
Yeah.
Stealth technology.
Some of it came from aliens.
Some of it came from aliens. And this flew in the Gulf War.
Yes.
But now, perhaps the most important, these little Walkman radios, computers, everything that we have, the heart of it is one of these.
As far as I'm concerned, the most important thing that we did was integrated circuit.
You saw it the first time.
Size of a quarter, black.
From the flying saucer
one
debris.
Was charred. I had about four or five of them.
So all this technology came from aliens?
We called it applied engineering. What we meant by that was give this information to industry that wants it and encourage them to take credit for it and take the patents.
But the aliens would love to have the patents.
Well,
maybe the aliens have lawyers.
I don't know.
So we talked to representatives of the companies cited in Colonel Corso's book. They hold the patents on things like Kevlar, fiber optics, lasers, night vision scopes, and integrated circuits, all items Corso maintains came from alien technology. It's a who's who of American industry. But Monsanto, DuPont, Hughes Aircraft, Bell Labs, and Dow Chemical all said they had never heard of Colonel Corso or the Roswell wreckage. Dow Chemical did expand its statement to say, quote, although we're not entirely certain, we strongly suspect that all of the men and women Dow scientists responsible for our inventions over the years hail from the planet Earth. And Bell Labs claimed that its technology, too, is, quote, grounded in the creativity and hard work of very talented Earthlings. Corso says the companies weren't supposed to know where their inventions came from. They were purposely misled. It was all part of the plan.
Roswell is not only a series of hoaxes, but it's rumor mongering, legend making, raconteuring, everything you can imagine.
Joe Nickel edits the Skeptical Inquirer, a publication dedicated to investigating claims of the paranormal.
So what is the likelihood that in some file in Washington that there was a little bag of artifacts from a crash site that ended up seeding all of these technological changes, as Colonel Corso claims?
I believe the odds are between zero and none.
That high. What crashed at Roswell?
What crashed at Roswell was a secret government spy balloon called Project Mogul.
It took 6 pounds of paper for the Air Force to say the same thing in this 1994 investigation. The Roswell UFO was a balloon. Colonel Richard Weaver, now retired, wrote the Air Force report. He feels for the Roswell faithful.
No, I think regardless of what the Air Force says itself or what anybody says that contradicts their beliefs in that, that they're not going to be happy, because some of these people have turned this into their life's calling. I got bad news for them. They're going to go down a pretty boring life because there's nothing there.
Period of time.
The findings were reiterated once again today in the latest Air Force report.
There were about 2,500 balloons launched during this 30-year period.
But no government report will deter the Roswell faithful, who are sure the truth is indeed out there. They have made Roswell, population 50,000, into a boomtown, home to not one but two UFO museums, more alien merchandising than any place in the galaxy, attracting thousands of little green men, mostly dead presidents, Lincoln, Jackson, and Grant. As for proud old soldier Philip Corso, he says there's even more to tell. It's not in his book, but you heard it here first.
Oh, here's this is the site here.
Not there. I saw something like this some other place.
Really?
Well, it's buffering. So,
that's the sort of typical debunking that you get.
They fail to mention the key witnesses like Jesse Marcel Jr.
How long do we have on the air today?
Have a lot of detail about
expected in Roswell this summer for the
Roswell story.
I mean, honestly, when we're watching that, I could either go on either side of the story. I haven't really seen anything or really looked at it much to even really make some opinion of it, you know. I don't know. But then, you know, we did play one time a lot of Stephen Greer's the Orion Project.
Right.
It was a press conference. That's right. It was May 2001 at the National Press Club. It was Stephen Greer and his Disclosure Project. And he had a lot of people with an impressive, they were all either, if not officers, military, but, you know, either the, like, FAA or even, you know, enlisted, sergeants, whatever. They had high top security clearance and they had all these stories. Really rather interesting.
I've met some of those people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, well, we got about a minute. I don't know. Hopefully we did something. So what would you like to... You can wrap it up and say anything particular, or
the theme is check the evidence. We heard the little Roswell video there, and it sounds like they're just sweeping it all to one side as a little joke, but it's very much more serious than that. And we have a lot of the same sorts of mishandling of information going on with the 9/11 research as with the UFO research. And if you look at some of the figures, for example, Alfred Weber, he's involved in 9/11 research, and he's also involved in research about extraterrestrials.
Okay.
So there's quite a lot of cross-fertilization between these two areas, and that's something I've been studying over the last sort of year as well, really. If people are listening and they want to check that out, please do, you know.
Mm. Yeah, checktheevidence.com, and then Dr. Judy Wood.
DrJudyWood.com.
And even the Morgan Reynolds, I hadn't been there in a long time. It's no more games. No.
.net, yeah.
Yeah, nomoregames.net. A lot of interesting research. Actually, one time I played a talk that he had with Thomas J. DiLorenzo and the real Lincoln. That's an interesting subject, especially for this area here in Shepherd's Thomas, Virginia.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew Johnson. Well, thank you very much. And actually, now, my God, it's half past midnight now, your time. I did my 2 hours, so I guess we'll stop it here. But yeah, maybe we'll try to think of I don't know. I mean, beating the story. I don't want to beat the story to death. But until it's resolved, until it's admitted, maybe we can do something on the Rudolf Steiner thing. But
I'd have to read up on that.
Yes, I could send you a link to where the book is. All of his books are on the web. You don't have to buy the book; they're right there on the web, and they're pretty interesting. Rudolf Steiner Archive.
Okay.
So I guess let me get my little house DJ going. So yes, I don't know. I don't know what I really want to bother Dr. Wood. I mean, I don't know what. Next time you communicate with her, just say something. Anything she might have as a serious update, maybe with a legal case or something. We've already gone all the
right. I'll mention it to her. I did mention it to her a couple of weeks ago. I think she was a bit tied up then. So
yeah.
I'm not sure what her schedule is at the moment. So I can certainly mention it to her then.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Andrew.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much.
Okay, then. Take care.
Take a good rest. All right. Thank you. Yes.
Bye for now. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
See ya.